like that.
Let's sing it again.
No, I shall not be moved.
Well, I was about to
move. We're in a series on joy, so we're glad you're here with us this morning. If you're a guest, we're especially proud to have you here. Got some of my family members here, so that's who Dayton was looking at a while ago in that little section. Not a coincidence that they're sitting by me. And if you're a guest, we're glad that you're here. I want to start out by talking about how simplicity can be very, very helpful in a complicated world. Sometimes it just helps to find the simple things that help us to cope. And just to give an illustration about something personally that helps me, I was thinking about If I were a dad, back when my dad was a dad and I was a boy, I was thinking about what he'd have to travel with to be equal to what I travel with now. And I started thinking, first of all, he had to get one of those Bell & Howe screens for his Bell & Howe projector. Remember those? They were encased in this cast iron protective shell. And I would have to get a camera in case I wanted to film anything on my trip. And I would have to get my TV set. I'd have to do something very unusual for my childhood. I'd have to bring a computer. But to do that, I'd have to get a trailer because it would be about the size of a room of a house. I'd have to get an adding machine. I had to get all my financial records, so any file that I'd have, I guess I'd have to box those up, and maybe I could put them back in the trailer. I want to get all my correspondence, so that would be, by now I may be getting just a U-Haul truck with a trailer behind, because I'm going to have to get all my correspondence that in case I want to refer to it, so all these boxed up letters. And I'm just going to stop here because we don't have much time for this illustration if I want to finish my sermon and get you out. I don't want to do that. I think that's way too much. Wait a minute. I just remembered. My mom's not here this morning, but I knew it drove her crazy when I was a boy and we'd go on trips because I'd get a bunch of my books and put them in the back seat. And I'd still want to do that today. I'd put 200 or 300 or 400, I guess, in there. You know, I'd want to get some commentaries, want to get my Bible. Matter of fact, I think I'd like to get 30 or 40 Bibles just to make sure I can compare. But why not get the original Hebrew too, the original Greek? Okay, I'm going to stop there. That's a lot of stuff I'm going to carry with me, right? Wouldn't it be nice to make that simple? Oh, wait, I think I will. I'll just bring it all in here. I got all that in here. I can stop now and take a video of you. Would you like for me to do that? And then I can show it to you. I can either show it to you on my phone, or I can give them the kind of connector to put up on the screen. I can take photographs with this. Didn't mention camera a while ago, did I? Just a regular camera. I can take photographs of this. And I've got hundreds of books, and I got all those commentary, all that on here. And I got my email correspondence and financial records and all that. And you have a lot of those things too. And maybe you have some things that I don't have. I'm not a game player, so I don't have any game. You may have brought the hall closet full of games in your phone here this morning. Now, I ask you not to play those while I'm preaching. But wouldn't it be good if we could find something simple like that, some kind of attitude, thought, action that we could encase everything in when it comes to living the Christian life of joy? Wouldn't it be nice if we could just boil it down to a sentence or maybe just a couple of words, maybe even just a word? Wouldn't that be nice? Well, I'm here today to tell you I think we can. I think we can encapsulate the entire Christian life of joy in just a couple of words. And if you push me, I'll even say one word. So that's what I want to do this morning. That's what this section we're looking at. I think we're looking at, outside of the key gospel sections in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, maybe the response to the gospel in Romans 6, 1 through 4. I think we're looking at the most important passage of Scripture in the entire New Testament because it does so much for us in terms of helping us know how to live. And yet it's rarely talked about when you consider these aspects of the Christian life. And I'm talking about Philippians chapter 2. Now, I want to give you a little context. Will you give me permission to read 15 verses? That's a lot for one reading. Have I got your attention long enough? Will you raise your right hand and repeat after me? I solemnly swear to give you my attention throughout this Bible reading, and we'll stay with you afterwards. So help you God. Okay, thank you. I'm going to read starting in Philippians chapter 1, verse 27. I'm going to take you down through chapter 2, verse 10. And we're actually picking up where we left off last week. This is out of the New International Version, 1978. Whatever happens, Paul writes, conduct yourselves in a manner worthy of the gospel of Christ. Then whether I come and see you or only hear about you in my absence, I will know that you stand firm in one spirit, contending as one man for the faith of the gospel, without being frightened in any way by those who oppose you. This is a sign to them that they will be destroyed, but that you will be saved, and that by God. For it has been granted to you on behalf of Christ, not only to believe on Him, but also to suffer for Him, since you're going through the same struggle that you saw that I had, and now, here, that I still have. If you have any encouragement from being united with Christ, if any comfort from His love, if any fellowship with the Spirit, if any tenderness and compassion, then make my joy complete by being like-minded, having the same love, being one in spirit and in purpose. Do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit, but in humility. Consider others better than yourselves. Each of you should look not only to your own interests, but also to the interests of others. Your attitude shall be the same as that of Christ Jesus, who, being in very nature God, did not consider equality with God something to be grasped, but made himself nothing, taking the very nature of a servant, being made in human likeness. And being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself and became obedient to death, even death on the cross. Therefore, God exalted him to the highest place and gave him the name that is above every name, that at the name of Jesus every knee should bow in heaven and on earth and under the earth, and every tongue confess that Jesus Christ is Lord, to the glory of God the Father. Now, let me give you a little bit of context to remind you why Paul is calling upon the Philippians to live out Christ, as he does in chapter 2. Remember that he's talking to a divided church. They've taken up sides. It started evidently with two women who were in conflict. And this is not a church that is enjoying joy. This is not a church that is united. It is divided. And they need to correct that. And then last week, we talked about what we want to give our lives to. And I can't think of none of this better than Paul and what he writes in Philippians 1:21. To live as Christ and to die is gain. I would say that to live as Christ would be a great purpose statement. Again, I can think of none better. It's a purpose that no circumstance can change, that death cannot stop, and it will live forever. What can be a better purpose than that? You can even call this your vision statement. And this morning, we'll talk about our mission statement. A great vision statement says where you're going. A great mission statement says how you're going to get there. A great vision statement says we're going to Rooster Cogburn's or whatever that restaurant is that you always go to. A great mission statement is we're going to go in our Volkswagen minivan or whatever it is, whatever vehicle is taking you there. So what we just read is the background for our mission statement. Our vision statement is to live as Christ. Now, how do you do that? That's what we want to talk about. And just to further unpack that, I want to give you a couple thoughts here. How to live Christ. First of all, maintain Jesus' mindset. Maintain Jesus' mindset. That's what chapter 2, verses 1 through 10 is about. What Paul is doing is he's explaining the mind of Christ. As a matter of fact, What he's saying to them is, you're fighting, you're split up, you don't have any joy. Well, how do you get joy? Being united in Christ, verse 1. If there's any comfort from love, any fellowship with the Spirit. You notice how these are all opposite of the fighting and the divisiveness? And then, if you get into the nuts and bolts, how to love Christ is to put others' interests above your own. Put other interests above your own. Verse 4. Each of you should look not only to your own interest, but also to the interest of others. Now, he's saying that after he says verse 3, which is, do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. In other words, don't be selfish. So what do we do if we're not selfish? Well, we put others' needs, here they translate it, we elevate those to the same level as our own needs. Now, some of your translations say put other people's needs above your own needs. And I think I want to go with that translation just because I think by default what we naturally do is we naturally gravitate to what we need. We have talked before about those survival instincts we have. Literally, our body is wired to help us survive. Have you ever tried to hold your breath to stop the hiccups? That's a challenge, isn't it? Why? Because at some point, for some of you, maybe 30 seconds, for some of you, maybe 60 seconds, for some of you, maybe 3 minutes, but at some point, your body's going to force you to breathe. You can't override it because it's wired to make you live. I've got a friend who's a trainer who says it's a hard thing to kill a human body. It's a hard thing to do because it is wired to live. But there is also a wiring that we have that calls us to consider the needs of others and to serve those needs. As a matter of fact, we've talked some before about chemicals, cortisol, that survival instinct, and endorphins. I like to run and get that runner's. Well, I'm using that as an example. I hate running, but I hear people say that. I've mentioned this to you before, that chemical oxytocin. That's the chemical you get after you do something unconditionally loving for someone else without wanting anything in return. That generosity of spirit. You know that good feeling you get? You just decide to do something for somebody else and you don't realize the time, but there's a backlash and it's a good one. And you leave that event feeling good. Years ago, when I was a sophomore at ACU, I was a member of the Southern Hills Church. And I was there on a Sunday, and they announced that Sister So-and-so had some kind of bad health event, and so she was put in a nursing home is near our campus, and they invited everybody to go visit her just to encourage her. 6 days later, on a Saturday night, my roommate was gone. This was wintertime. It was January. It was cold outside. There were no ball games going on campus. Nobody in the dorm seemed like. Didn't have a date that night. One of those rare events, I'm sure. And I sat in my room, and I was kind of feeling down. Just didn't have anything to do. Just felt bad. Just felt melancholy. And about 6:30... I thought, and it's already dark outside, I thought, you know what? I think I'm going to go over and visit Sister So-and-so. That's how desperate I was. So I go over, and I don't know if I'm Adam. The only reason I know it's hers is because I got a name on the door. And I go in, hey, Sister So-and-so, I'm Mark, and nice to meet you. And I just want to come by and say hello. And we get in this conversation. And I realized after a period of time, I should leave. And so I bid her goodbye, and the door across the hall is open. And there's this old guy in there, and he said, hey, what are you doing? And I stuck my head in and told him I was visiting Sister So-and-so, and he said, well, come in here and visit me. So I did. I go in there and visit. We just had a good conversation. Anyway, About 7:30, 8 o'clock, I've been there an hour, hour and a half, and I know I need to leave because they got to shut that thing down, let everybody go to bed. And I go in the car, and I'll never forget this. I had my AM radio. That's all we. I had in my car. I had my radio on, my AM radio, and I was listening to music, and then I just became aware of this wave of good feeling that had washed over me. Dare I say, I felt better returning to my dorm from a nursing home than I had after letting off a girl from a date on many of those Saturday nights. But I did. I just felt good. And I didn't know what it was at the time, but now I know from our sciences that was oxytocin. That was a gift of God. Our scientist friends tell us that we evolved into that, or nature gave us that. I think God gave us that. That's a gift of God. He created us that way. He created us that way to help us do the right thing. He wants us to be a loving people. God has wired us to do the right thing. You are wired by God to love others unconditionally. You're called to live a life of putting other people's needs above your own. And Jesus showed you how to do it. And folks, I really believe that. I think you're naturally going to make sure that you live. Not many of us in here have missed many meals. We're going to do what we can to make sure we live. But it's hard, and we got to be intentional about this, to look to the needs of others and do that on a regular basis. And yet what we have just read was the example of Jesus. And one of the reasons why I feel comfortable is about saying elevate other people's needs above our own is because that's exactly what Jesus did when he came here. He came knowing he's going to what? Die, right? We're going to be having communion here in a minute, the Lord's Supper. What are we celebrating? We're celebrating the life of Jesus. We're celebrating the death of Jesus. And of course, we celebrate the resurrection of Jesus. But Jesus came knowing that he was going to give up his life for us. That is the epitome of putting our needs above his needs, putting other needs, other people's needs above our own. And he did that. And that's what we're called to. That's the mind of Jesus, putting other people's needs above our own. If I could boil it down to two words, I'd say love unconditionally. Love unconditionally. If you just think about that, love unconditionally. You've got something to meet every day that you have, every event in your day. And if you say, with your gun, you point your gun at me, okay, give me one word, I'd say love. But remember, when I say love, I don't mean love in the same way of I love ice cream. I love DQ blizzards. I love Brahms chocolate malts. That's a different kind of love. When I say love, I'm talking about unconditional love. I'm talking about the love of Philippians 2. I'm talking about the mind of Christ. That's the kind of love. But if you got to think about one thing every day, wake up thinking about love. Loving unconditionally. And that'll work with your family. That'll work at work. I have a thing where I don't go into all the religious teaching, but I go into these businesses and schools and corporations when I try to talk to them about how to make their workplace better. And I take this and I translate it into language that they understand and explain it to them because it works at work. I'm telling you, folks, I have seen people who are twisted up in knots because they're worrying about, my boss has done this to me. My underling has done this to me. My career is at stake. And they're just going back and forth like a ship tossed in the ocean because everything they're trying to think of doing is determined by either what someone is doing to them or what they anticipate someone's doing. That is a hard way to live. And it can lead to anxiety. It can lead to anger. It can lead to depression. It can lead to a lot of things. But if they just think about what's the loving thing I can do here, what's the loving thing I can do to my corporation that's trying to rip me off? What's the loving thing I can do to my customer who doesn't care about me? What's the loving thing I can do to my boss who's treating me badly? This works in every situation. What's the loving thing I can do to the person who's really nice to me This works in every situation. Going back to the family model, I've got an acquaintance one time who had a lady come in who was wanting to leave her husband. And he said, but wait a minute, my acquaintance said, but you're called to love your husband. And she said, I can't do that. And he said, well, can you love him like a friend? No, no. I don't like him like a friend. I don't love him like a friend. He's not a friend to me. And he said, okay, then love him like an enemy. That's what Jesus said in the Sermon on the Mount. You can't love him like your husband. You can't love him like a friend. Love him like an enemy. But you will love him. At least if you're going to be part of Jesus, you will love him. Now, the beautiful thing about that is it simplifies life. I don't have to worry about who I hate, who I don't, who's on my bad list, who's on my good list. I don't have to be Santa Claus. You know, he knows when you're sleeping and who's been good, who's been bad. And I don't have to worry about that. I don't have to be world Santa Claus because I'm just going to love everybody. That's our calling. Does that make sense? I understand it's hard to do, but is it simple to understand? You don't have much to think about when you get up in the morning. You don't have much to think about in your day. It's not that complicated. Just love. Love people. And I actually think the world is rigged where most of the time it's going to come back in our favor if you do that. I can't tell you how many times I've had good situations happen to me because somebody mistreated me and I responded in a way that was loving instead of how I really wanted to do, which was get my knife out and go right in their back. Didn't do that. And you know what? I've gotten better jobs. I've gotten better opportunities from when I do that than if I just said, okay, they're dead to me. But I do recognize, and we've all had them, there are times when you do the loving thing and they never come around. You find meaning in your suffering. In those times when you suffer, just find meaning in your suffering. That's basic Holocaust 101. And I'm not kidding. That's what Viktor Frankl said. That's how he got through the Holocaust. He was in Germany, Auschwitz camp. All his family was murdered. And he figured out those that survived, they found meaning in their suffering. If people will just insist upon never treating you right, then love them and find meaning in your suffering. Now, that's actually a different sermon from a different day, but I had to say that just because I know somebody's in there saying, wait a minute, my husband left me with 35 kids and never came back even though I tried to love him. You know, and I get that. Sometimes you got to find meaning in your suffering. But it doesn't negate the loving unconditionally. That is our call. And I want to go to another deep philosophical illustration to just end up with. Now, in this audience, I feel good because I know everybody's seen it because you got grandkids. Now, if I'm with a younger audience, sometimes I don't know if they've seen it or not. But are you familiar with that movie, Frozen? I think I've told you this before. That's one of my favorite movies because the guy that's a snowman. You know, what's his name? Yeah. You know, he really turned me off. I hadn't seen too many snowmen that could disembody themselves and put them, you know, I just thought it was silly. But I was sitting there watching it because some of my kids wanted to watch it. And the girl on the right was engaged. Remember that? And it was just, it really wasn't for good reasons. And the guy behind her, he could figure out, you know, you're living a pretty shallow life. And then the snowball said, love is about putting other people's needs above your own. You know, you don't become engaged to somebody in one day. That's not love. Love is putting other people's needs above your own. It's not some kind of fancy fireworks and everything. Remember, it doesn't end in a wedding. Now, it's implied. But I like this because it wasn't about fairy tale romances. This was about unconditional love. And that permeated the movie. I am being faithful to the plot line, right? Okay, but more or less, good. And I love that teaching because that's Philippians 2. We just look at putting other people's needs over our own. The plot line of Frozen, you got a lot of people there who are saying, how can I meet your needs? Even to the point of sacrificing myself, I want to do that. That's how we're called to live. That's the Christ-like life. And Paul's telling them in Philippians, if you can pull that off, you're not going to be divided. And you're going to have joy in your life. And next week, we're going to zero in more about how to live this out. Because I think it's very, very important. One of the things we struggle with is our fallen nature goes against this. And it's always trying to push us in the corner where we're tempted to not live this out. So we're going to talk about how to deal with that, but that's next week's sermon. What I want to do here, though, is I just want to end up with a true emphasis about if you and I can pull this off, then we are going to live lives of joy. Because our standards for what it is to live life, it's not going to be how good the thermostat feels to us, how good our car is, how good our house is. It's not going to be how people we love treat us or how they live their lives. It's just going to be about what we do, loving others unconditionally. And we can do that, as Paul says, whether we're in a jail cell or experiencing all the finest things of life. That's why Paul was able to experience joy. That's why you and I can experience the joy of Christ. And we can experience it. We can. So I want to end today by just reminding us, you're called to love others unconditionally. You're called to love your spouse unconditionally. You're called to love your spouse. You're called to put your spouse's needs above your own. You're called to put your children's needs above your own. You're called to put your kinfolk's needs above your own. You're called to put your boss's needs above your own. You're called to put your employees' needs above your own. You're called to put your students' needs above your own. You're called to put your friends' needs above your own. You're called to put your enemies' needs above your own. Love. That's it. Let's stand and sing.